I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. Weeks before primary voting begins, the Republican presidential race remains wide open. Chris Christie, Sarah Palin out. Herman Cain is in after his straw in Florida's poll broke Rick Perry's back. Rick Scott is under fire over how he's calculating how many jobs he'll create in Florida and remembering Governor Claude Kirk, who passed away late last month. We'll cover all this and more in our monthly political roundup with 90.7 political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. That's coming up on Intersection. And I'm joined by 90.7 political commentators, Democrat Dick Batchelor, former State House representative. Good to have you, Dick.
Great to be back. Thank you.
And also Lou Fry, former Republican Congressman. Lou, good to see you.
Dick got back from China where he made a big hit as usual, and we're delighted to have you home in one piece.
We're happy that they let you come back.
I'm very. No one would pay the ransom, so I'm back. And Lou's taking off to Turkey.
Andrea was chipping in with us.
So, guys, just recently, Governor Rick Scott has come out and said he's tried to clarify his calculations for how many jobs he was going to create in the state of Florida. He campaigned saying that he would create, on top of the regular million-dollar projection economists had out there, 700,000 jobs in 7 years. There's been some back and forth on what he actually said, but now he's come out and stuck to that campaign promise. Dick Batchelor, what do you see as the reason that the governor wavered on this and now has had to come out and actually send a press release clarifying what he said? This has gone on for some weeks.
He was for it before he was against it, I suppose. The bottom line is the campaign, we all remember, that he promised us to create 700,000 new jobs on top of any jobs created by the ordinary economic recovery. And I think he's finally gotten out from under the ether and understand that there's a real world out here. And on one hand, you say the government does not create jobs. They have some ability to maybe incent jobs. But the bottom line is that he's changed his position. The economy is bad. He's announced for re-election. And so he really needs to backtrack, and he has backtracked, but it's very obvious.
So why do you think did this become a problem? This didn't necessarily have to become a big issue, did it?
Well, it only because he made the commitment over and over again. It was his mantra, I will create 700,000 new jobs over and over again. That's what he said on top of the economic recovery. He's basically changing his position because he can't get there from here.
And now he's come out and said, regardless of what the economy does, he still is sticking to that pledge of creating 700,000 jobs in 7 years. Lou Fry, do you see this as just an amateur way to handle the situation that didn't have to turn into a flare?
Well, first let me say, I will settle right now for 600,000 new jobs, whether they came before. I'm serious. I mean, we're in a terrible position we've been in, and the job thing, there's nothing funny about it. I think most of us believe that it would be 700,000 jobs on top of where it is. Obviously, the first thing, if I'm in the other party, I look at and everything, and I say, gee, where are the jobs? In a microcosm here of what Obama's going to face nationally, because where are the jobs? 9.2% unemployment again, and the Republicans are going to go back and take all the clippings of Obama saying we're going to create jobs over this, and the Democrats are going to do the same thing in the state. So it's politics, and when you open yourself up by letting your mouth go before your brain comes into activity, you can sometimes create problems for yourself.
Was it foolhardy to make that promise of 700,000 jobs? Should you, in politics, not be so specific?
Who won?
Well, I guess you could say he won.
I mean, you know, I'm not being funny, but I mean, he that was a very big, important part of it. And just like Obama, you know, spoke in great things, you know, we shall make changes in all this. Well, we, you know, sometimes you make them and they're not really what you want. So I think it's politics.
In recent weeks, the governor had kind of hemmed and hawed on what he actually said and now has come out to clarify his position. He also recently announced that he's planning to run again for a second term
in the governor's office. Sure.
Did he have to clean up this mess if he's going to do that?
Yes. And he's got some good people around him now, by the way, and that who really know Tallahassee and the political thing. And he's doing a lot better in terms of his personal appearances and that. But they said to him, look, you've done this. Take your hit now. It's 14 months or so before the election. If you're going to get hit now. You don't want this to happen a year from now. And so you'll find this in most campaigns. If there's a problem, it comes out early. You put it in the table, and it's old news when it comes to voting.
A bit of a preventative cleanup. Dick Batchelor, what do you think it means, though, for someone like Alex Sink, who considering a run at a second round for the governor? Are we going to see Scott versus Sink again?
But actually, I don't know. I think there are a number of candidates. Anytime you've got a governor's seat available, you're going to attract a lot of candidates. I think Dan Gelber might get in the race.
Who ran for AG last time.
Democratic
representative.
In fact, Senator Nan Rich has said that she's going to get in the race. She's the senior senator, state Democratic senator in the Senate. But so it's wide open. So whether Alex Six gets it or not, there are going to be a lot of candidates in that race.
You know, looking back in recent news, there was a surprise in Florida when Herman Cain at the Presidency 5 event came out as the winner in the Republican primary straw poll. CBS poll recently has Cain tied with Mitt Romney. Other polls show Cain surging, Romney running in place, Rick Perry losing ground. How much does that Florida straw poll matter, Lou Frey?
Well, they all matter. I think they matter a lot more than they should. I mean, we go bananas over 20 people voting in Iowa in that. And so, but there's nothing more to write about. But, you know, one of the things, and I think Dick will agree with me, we don't believe in coincidences in politics. When you look at that straw poll, you'll find that Romney was not there. He spoke before, but he didn't show up the next couple of days and so forth. There were Romney voters there. They were there. One of the things that Romney wanted to do in that straw poll was stop the governor of Texas. That was the big mantra that they wanted to do. And they did stop the governor of Texas. They finished just about equal on it. And I know it would shock Dick to think that possibly, just possibly, a lot of people who were there for Romney decided, Romney's going to do all right, but we really want to stop the governor of Texas, so maybe we won't vote for Romney. Maybe we'll vote for Cain. And where did all this excess votes come all of a sudden? So it's happened before. It's happened. I've been involved in stuff like that where, you know, it's
a compromise.
It's a compromise kind of thing. So I think Cain is now going to be suffering from what everybody looks at, and some survive and a lot don't. He's really going to be torn apart. Personally, I think he's going to end up, if he doesn't get the nomination, I don't think he could be vice president. I think he could end up in the Republican administration. The
Secretary of Commerce.
So a serious contender then,
yeah,
still.
Definitely.
Dick Batchelor.
I want to comment very quickly, too, on the straw polls, because, you know, if you look at the one in Iowa, you catapult some people like Michelle Bachmann, but she's really gone at this point in time. I think I used the term last time that the Republican primary, they're playing whack-a-mole. You know, Donald Trump comes up, they whack him, he's gone. Michelle Bachmann comes, she's gone.
Rick they have
Perry,
gone through
shoot
a
out at the OK Corral.
Well, actually, and Rick Perry, actually, he took himself hostage and has not let go yet. So he's the most, he's died quicker than any candidate I've ever seen on the scene.
Giuliani.
Yeah, he did too. But Cain's going to be around for a while, but not very long. You still have to do Iowa in January. You've got to do the caucus. That's a caucus state, not a primary state. New Hampshire is a primary state. Open primary, independents can vote in the primary. So we'll see. He gets to South Carolina. I think he gets tapped down. Perry goes up. But then you got Super Tuesday. I don't think it'll last beyond Super Tuesday.
You know, this discussion about the presidential primary also brings up the actual date of Florida's primary, which the legislature or a team of lawmakers recently announced. They want to move the 2012 presidential primary to January 31st. That, of course, is in contrast to national GOP rules. The state could lose half delegates at the party's national convention this year in Tampa. Lou Frey, what do you
Who
make
cares?
Of all this? Who cares? Why not?
The answer is political clout. And the reason you want your primary early is because all the operatives come in, everybody's in, the candidates are in, you get to know them. If you're 49th in the thing, nobody really cares. And political clout does make a difference. Just if I can, for 2 quick seconds, when I was first elected, they moved the Navy base. They announced it was going to Congressman
Here
Bob Sykes. Yeah, district Democrat in that. And I called the White House and said, you know, thanks, I need a job. And actually, I talked to John Mitchell and he said, why? And I told him what he did. He said, well, we'll take care of that. And the next thing I know, the Secretary of Navy's down here. He's inspecting, looking. Gee, guess what? In about 2 weeks, he announces that the base is going to stay and Sykes is going to get something else, political clout. Even more important, McCoy. I was told I had to close McCoy and Patrick.
And you're talking about the two air bases here in Central Florida.
And I got the president to take Patrick off the base. And after 3 years of work, I was put in charge of it. We were able to get McCoy transferred to the city of Orlando for $1. And both of those happened, and the Sentinel wrote an article about it because of political clout.
So what do you see then about those still losing half the delegates, Lou? Why doesn't that have an impact?
No,
not in the process.
And where you sit in the convention doesn't make any difference.
And where your hotel is at the meeting. Look, Denver, I was at Denver last year. The hotel was a nice bus ride out. The seats were not very good, and you lost half the delegates. But who does? Here's a point, not a problem at all. Ohio, Michigan, other states, but Florida will be the pivotal state. Florida has been the decisive state in the last two presidential elections. It's very important. We do not want to wait. Again, we are miniaturized by the process at this point. Iowa caucus, New Hampshire, South Carolina, they do not reflect the makeup of this country. Florida is more like the boiling pot of this nation than any other state. Move it up, forego the
number
delegates,
five,
not a
right?
big deal. But
we
need to make a decision early on and influence the selection on the Republican side of the nominee.
What does this mean, though, for Florida? Florida has been an important state for many years, Lou Frey, even before they started moving around this primary. So how much is it really gaining Florida, do you think?
Oh, a lot. We're going to gain an awful
lot.
It's worth the sacrifice.
It's
not even a big price. It's really a throwaway. The chance to be involved and to back the person who's going to be president of the United States early on is a unique opportunity in politics and a unique opportunity in another state. We're number five right now. We can certainly handle that, but we can't handle being number 35 or 40. And let me tell you, I'll just say one other thing. It does make a difference. Political clout does make a difference, and the ability to get a hold of the White House and actually have somebody call you back is something that's worth losing half your delegates.
Dick Batchelor, what does this mean for Democrats moving this presidential primary date?
First of all, there's no primary for the Democrats, so it really doesn't have much of an effect. Again, losing half the delegates is no big deal. Where your hotel is not either. It's a small sacrifice. I agree with Lou. The fact is, look, if you help deliver the state of Florida, whichever party wins, but you're an operative, you help deliver the state of Florida, it's a lot of influence. I remember when Bill Clinton won, and we were on a small plane with Lieutenant Governor Buddy McKay, five of us flying to Washington, met at the Hay Adams Hotel with the background, which was the White House silhouetted again in the background, meeting with the President-elect Bill Clinton and the First Lady-to-be, and saying, who do we want in Florida in the cabinet?
Yeah.
That's how it works. That's how it works.
Absolutely correct.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Well, we want to know what you think out there about Florida moving its presidential
only
primary.
Only if you agree with this, though.
You can tell us on Facebook or Twitter. Send email to intersection@wmfe.org. Of course, we're talking with 90.7's political commentators, Democrat Dick Batchelor and Republican Lou Frey.
And the news director of 90.7.
And congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you so much. I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. Florida's Republican Senator Marco Rubio is saying he's not going to be a contender for the vice presidential slot in 2012, even if it was offered to him. But Rubio, a Cuban-American, is seen as a strong political rising star in the GOP, attractive to maybe bring in that critical Hispanic vote in this state. Do you think, Lou Frey, Rubio might change his mind at all?
Yeah, I do. And I go back to when I was a kid and I watched the Kennedy election when Lyndon Johnson, who couldn't stand him, held his nose and ran with him as the vice president. And the pressure that can be put on you in that position would be, I think, tremendous. And I think probably it's one for the good of the country. You'd have to give in. As you know, for the whole period of time, my advice to him is keep your head down, keep your mouth shut, talk on only a few issues, build your base because you've got a long time to go. But sometimes in politics, the timing is out of your control, and he could be the difference in terms of winning or losing.
What would that mean, though? He would have to give up that seat as a candidate?
No, not yet.
No, but if he loses, he can retain his seat, and if he vacated his seat, the governor can appoint him. Reappoint him anyway.
Yeah, so governor can appoint the Senate, but not in the House. The House cannot be appointed.
So would that create an interesting situation in Florida politics and also change things for Bill Nelson further down the line if this was to follow out?
Well, I think what is really going to be more interesting, I believe, number one, I agree with Lou, the fact is, but I still don't think he's going to be chosen. He's very young, he's a very smart guy, and he's buying his time. The fact is he is so young, if Democrats elected, he's got four more years. If Republicans elected him up, he has between 4 and 8 more years. He'll only be maybe 48, 49 years old at the most. He's got plenty of time. But if a nominee comes to you and say, look, I can't win without you, it's hard. You'd be hard-pressed to say, I don't want to run with you. I don't care who says they're not interested in being vice president. Everyone is interested in being vice president. except for those who want to be president. I think what's going to happen, though, if you look at where's Jeb Bush coming back into play, when is he going to run again? Is he going to run again?
Tell me. Could he run this time?
So, please tell me so we can break this news.
Well, here's the thing.
Yes.
He created – well, I shouldn't say he created. He helped mold, if I can use those terms, Marco Rubio.
Sure. Rubio is known as being kind of a protege.
So now you might have – you get the protege and you got the mentor and the mentee. And if the timing's not right, they could end up having to decide who's going to run themselves.
Yeah, and that's the one person, by the way, I think, who could come out of the Republican establishment nationally now at this point and be a credible candidate is Bush.
But I disagree. I think the Bush name is just not have the.
You think we're bushed out?
It needs to be aired.
We're bushed
out
and Rick Perry's reminding us of it, so we're bushed and parried out.
I respect your opinion.
Listen, I disagree with you, but I respect your opinion.
Listen.
Are we married?
Probably.
Listen, just briefly, guys, while we're talking about vice presidents, it makes me think about the lieutenant governor. I saw something in the papers today asking why Florida still needs a lieutenant governor. And, of course, that position created, right, to make sure that if something should happen to the governor.
I think you and I were both there when Claude Kirk did that. Claude Kirk was very much involved in the rewriting of the Constitution, which every 10 years in Florida is reviewed, and including the fact that you could only be a one-term governor and that. And he felt that it was important that in Florida, a state this big, number one, you could run again. And he felt that the lieutenant governor was an office that could be used effectively. And also, if something happened to the governor, it was an easier way, a better way to make a transition.
And I'm trying to think, and some of the listeners will be better at it, maybe Lou, than I, any lieutenant governor that's become governor. And I do it.
Buddy McKay?
Well, for a short period.
Well,
for
only
a short
because
period
of the death, though.
Yeah, but, oh, okay.
But anybody who's actually served as a lieutenant governor, going on to be lieutenant governor. In fact, we could go back in history starting in 1970 with Tom Adams and probably name four or five lieutenant governors who probably almost cost the governors their seats because they – they didn't stay on the reservation, so to speak.
Still an office worthy of having.
Yeah, I think this, you know, it used to be when under Charles McKay, what they did is they made Lawton Charles appointed his lieutenant governor, Buddy McKay, as Secretary of Commerce. So he had like a real job, too. So, you know, real responsibility.
When I ran with the first lady ever to be for it, Marilyn Evans Jones, and I was going to use her, and we announced it to work with the legislature. That was going to be her job. She was going to be my person in the legislature and working with the legislature because she was respected in both sides of the aisle, was bright. And I thought it would be just a waste of time to have her just running around, you know, doing a few
funerals
and stuff like that. Yeah.
Ceremonial things. Let me ask you this, guys. President Obama coming into Orlando this week. He's going to be going to a couple fundraisers, including one with the local attorney, Democratic fundraiser John Morgan. First of all, what do you think about the significance of the president coming to Orlando, Dick Batchelor? What's the inside track on this?
I-4 corridor. Can you spell I-4 corridor? And actually, that's the second reason. The first reason is there's money here. Same reason you go to rob banks, right, as Willie Horton would say. The he's coming here to raise money. I would guess, I don't know this, but I would surmise that John Morgan probably had to commit to raise $500,000 at least.
Yeah.
There are two fundraisers, one in his house,
$1,500.
And there's another smaller fundraiser that day. So the president would leave town at least $500,000. He'll be back probably in November for another $500,000 fundraiser. So he's coming here because this is where the money is here. South Florida.
This is a campaign stop, not an official White House stop.
Oh, yeah.
So, Lou Fry, do you think, or maybe I should ask you, Dick, but both, what do you think? Is Charlie Crist?
Well, tell me. Yeah, I'm just going to say, I think this is the answer. If Charlie Crist shows up
Let me get this question out. The question is Charlie Crist going to be
at
that fundraiser with John Morgan? That's the question. Charlie Crist be there?
I think he's going to be there. And I think if he is going to be there, it's a signal that Charlie Crist is going to run for office sometime in the near future as a Democrat somewhere in the state of Florida. So I'm just really intrigued to see if he shows up.
We've been predicting this for a while. What do you think, Dick?
I concur with that, and it could be a congressional seat in the St. Pete area, or he might revisit whether or not he wants to run for governor again.
And that would be an interesting contest indeed against Rick Scott.
Or if there's an open seat for the Senate.
That's true. If that, although I don't know if he'd be under consideration from Governor
for the
Scott.
Republican.
Well, but you never know. Politics is a funny thing.
The bottom line is, I agree with Lou. If he shows up at the Barack Obama fundraiser, particularly if he hugs the president, he's in the Democratic shoot,
and he's in John Morgan's law firm. For those who don't understand, and Morgan is one of the biggest.
Right.
fundraisers, as are the trial lawyers for the Democratic
Party.
Very
big fundraiser.
We're talking with Dick Batchelor and Lou Frey. This is the monthly Intersection Politics segment on Intersection on 90.7. I am Mark Simpson. State politics, you know, they've been looking back, crunching the numbers. Senate President Mike Haradopoulos says the state facing another $2.5 billion budget shortfall. Floridians should be expecting more deep cuts to government programs and services. You know, just recently, though, it sounded like Governor Scott said the state was in better financial straits. You know, how many years have we gone through these budget reductions, Dick Batchelor and Lou Frey, and how much further can it go?
Well, a few, as Lou pointed out when we were just before we began the talk here, you know, there's about $3 billion, I think, reduction last year and another $2 billion this year. It can't go much further. Look, there was a lot of pain inflicted last year with the budget cuts, and I'm not sure the legislature wanted to do it, but they did it. I'm not sure they can do that again. If you look at some of the cuts, whether it's mental health funding programs, people with disabilities program, Medicaid programs, forcing the hospitals to take less money in Medicaid reimbursement, you know, which is $20 billion of your state budget if you include the federal dollars. They've got some very tough decisions to make. I think what this means is that the governor's proposal to rescind the intangible tax across the board is not going to happen. The corporate income taxes will not be reduced. You can't finance that. These budget cuts go way beyond the muscle meat.
Lou Frey, let me put you under the big Republican label here and ask you a fundamental question that I put to Governor Scott when I talked to him. I said, how far can you cut before you start to really impact what services are remaining? And let me also throw out the caveat that Florida is known for already having one of the smaller state governments and a very efficient one at that. Don't you get to a point where you're getting diminishing returns by cutting too far?
Yes.
So what do you do?
Well, what you try and do.
You're the governor now. What do you do, Lou Frey?
Well, what you try and do is you try and look for some sources, some income sources that you can tap. And there aren't all that many floating around. It may even be you reach the point where you just can't do any more cuts. And what you look for some sort of an increase in the sales tax or come up with some novel idea. That, you know, the penny tax, which will go towards these particular things, including education and health or something
like
that.
But then what happens, though, as we've seen in Tallahassee, those dedicated funding sources end up getting raided. We're talking about trust funds, and the legislature
has
had to raid those.
Well, then that's the legislature's fault. If you do it and you have it there, that's shame on you. I resigned as one of the lottery commissioners, the first ones, because I was promised that wouldn't happen, that the money would be for education. And I found out what they were doing is they're putting it one hand out of the other. And I said, that's not the deal.
Dick Batchelor, you've sat in that seat up in Tallahassee. You come to a point where you look at what money you have available and what it's been promised for. But you've got, at the end of the day, a constitutional obligation to have a balanced budget. At what point do you stand up for scruples? And what point do you stand up for the finances? And how do you balance it out?
Well, also, you got a constitutional requirement, too. We had to appropriately fund education, public education, K-12 at least anyway. I think if you go back and look at the Bush years, following the Childs years, the Bush years, I think a lot of improvements have been made in the way we deliver services. I think government is Florida does look at government from a business paradigm. I think a lot of efficiencies have been built into the government. I think a lot of cuts. I think a lot of these agencies are now down to the bone. For instance, you've got 30,000 people on the waiting list for people with disabilities. They can't get in group homes. They can't get treatment. You got mental health funds being cut. At some point in time, let me use one example, Department of Juvenile Justice. If you don't have diversionary programs and take a child who's a first offender, minor offense, and put them in a juvenile diversion program, if you're forced to put them in secure detention, 50% of those in secure detention end up in the state prison system. So it's pay me now or pay me later. So we get to the point, there is a point of diminishing returns, and you got to look at it, what I call from a cost avoidance standpoint. Do you want to invest the money now to avoid further costs down the road?
Lou Frey, just briefly, what do you think? Is it likely at all that Governor Rick Scott, if the president's job plan moves through Congress, would consider accepting federal funds given the dire situation financially Florida faces?
Well, I would recommend that he accepts funds. There are exceptions to everything. You can be philosophically against, and that's fine. But when you have so many people out of work, and not just for a week or two, but for now going on years. I think if it's legitimate building projects, and I was the governor, I would reach out and I would do it. And you may get heck from some people, but I think it's the right thing to do.
Former Florida Governor Claude Kirk passed away late last month. He was the first Republican governor in the 20th century, elected in 1966. Under his tenure, as you mentioned, the Florida Constitution rewritten, a number of other significant events. What do you remember about Claude Kirk, Lou Frey?
I remember we took over the Republican Party, some young guys in 65, and we had nobody to run for governor. We're sitting in a room in Gainesville, and this guy burst into us, Claude Kirk. He'd run in 4 years before against Bessert Holland for Senate, and I'd been his local chairman in that. And he said, I can win, you know. And we said we had nobody else, so we got the couple people out of the race, and next thing we know, he won. And then a miracle happened. The governor, Hayden Burns, the incumbent Democratic governor, was running in a primary against Robert King High, who was the mayor of Miami, and Burns had gotten some trouble, and the next thing you know, High won the election. And all the Democrats north of practically Orlando came over to our side. Our campaign with Kirk was keep him from talking to anybody. We wrote 3.5 pages high of positions, and anytime he's asked about an issue, he said, I've written on that. We're going to tell you about it. We dumped that paper on the press 3 weeks before. Nobody ever read it. And Kirk won by some large amount. It was one of those classic, you know, if you wrote a book about it, nobody believe it.
What about you, Dick Batchelor? What's your experience?
I was in high school reading about Lou Frey, a history book. No, I was in high school. I remember it with the teacher strike. It was in 1968, I think, right after the governor was elected.
Stokely Carmichael?
Yeah, I remember Stokely Carmichael, H. Rapp Brown, when he confronted them in Jacksonville. But you've got to remember also his environmental. He really was a pro-environmentalist. In fact, Nat Reed, who was his director, I forget the title, Natural Resources,
EPA
I think,
or
back
yeah.
then.
Florida Department of Environmental Protection.
Yeah, I think it was either that or Natural Resources. Nat Reed, and who went on to serve under Nixon also in environmental policy matters, Deputy Secretary of the Department of Interior. But anyway, he had a strong voice there on the environment. In fact, many, many years later, he still was litigating on behalf of the Miccosukees, I think, in the Everglades, the forced sugar to clean up the Everglades. So after all those years, in fact, I remember when he came to Orlando for the Lou Frey Institute, where we had all the former governors there and really made even an environmental statement there, too. I think one part of his legacy will be the environment.
And you can go online to loufrey.org and go to the symposium. You can pick him out and listen. He spoke for 48 minutes, and he had everybody laughing, including all the governors. And I even saw Ruben Askew laugh 4 times.
Well, I wonder, though, do you think the movement that he started, the Republican dominance in Tallahassee, do you think that we're going to go into the 21st century for as long a run as the Republicans had to wait to before we see Democrats up there?
Oh, I don't think so. Things swing in politics up and down. Yeah. And you got to remember, it was Kirk was a start, but there was a lot that went on after Kirk to build the Republican Party. He really was just the spearhead, if you would.
Well, I've been speaking with Dick Batchelor, former Democratic State House representative and now head of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Dick, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And also, of course, we've been joined by Lou Frey, former Republican congressman, now with Lowndes, Drostek, Doster, Cantor, and Reed. Lou, good to have you in.
Does our check go up now that you're the director and everything? Do we make more money?
I think double it.
It's stuck in the mail, guys. I keep telling you guys.
Well, don't close the post
office.
Do we
get a better? Do we get a T-shirt?
Maybe we can get you a mug. The conversation about what's happening in Florida politics continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can always sign up for our weekly podcast. Tell us what you're thinking about. Go head over to the Facebook and Twitter pages for WMFE or shoot an email over to intersection@WMFE.org. Support for the program comes from our listeners. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks so much for listening.